Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Welcome to San Francisco City Insider, the San Francisco Chronicle podcast on the people and politics making headlines in the city by the bay. I'm Chronicle columnist Heather Knight, and I'm here today with Shannon Izinga, executive director of the Gubbio Project. It allows homeless people to sleep during the day in city churches. We're talking today about the city's homeless crisis, why sleep is such a big issue for people living on the streets, and what you can do to help. Shannon Izinga, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
It's good to see you. So for people who don't know what the Gubbio Project is, can you give a brief description and a history of this amazing project that exists in San Francisco A lot of people don't know about?
Absolutely, yeah. We are sort of a well-kept secret, for better or worse. So the Gubbio Project's mission is to be in community with and to provide safe, sacred sanctuary and compassionate respite to our unhoused neighbors. We work in partnership with St. Boniface Catholic Church in the Tenderloin and St. John the Evangelist in the Mission. And every day we open the doors of the sanctuary for approximately 320 of our homeless neighbors to come in and take part in what we call sacred sleep. Most folks living on the street, I would say all, are not getting any kind of quality sleep. And we all know that chronic sleep deprivation leads to all kinds of health conditions and mental health conditions. So Gubbio, we're meeting a really important need. We tend to the physical, social, psychological, spiritual needs of our guests. So in addition to the sleep program, we also have mobile health clinics that come in, and we provide spiritual support and chaplaincy support. We can make referrals to other social services. We hand out supplies. That's a really big piece of what we do in this time of year. That's very much needed: blankets, ponchos, socks, toiletries. And at the core is providing community and honoring the inherent dignity and worth of every one of our unhoused neighbors here in the city.
I love the phrase sacred sleep. Can you define what that means to you?
Sacred sleep. It's sacred on many levels. It's sacred, and then of course it's happening in a religious space. So folks are coming in and they're sleeping on the pews in St. Boniface. And also at St. Boniface, Mass goes on while folks are sleeping. Folks aren't asked to leave when church starts. People are worshiping right alongside folks that are resting. And at St. John's, people come in and they rest on mats because we don't have pews there. Tending to sleep is a sacred act, and it is core to our well-being on every level.
You've been on the job for 2 months, you said, almost
tomorrow.
Okay. Where were you working before that? Just wanted to get a quick bio of you and how you wound up here.
So immediately prior to being here, I was directing academic programs at Star King School for the Ministry at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. I actually studied there as well, got my Master's of Divinity there, and they are a wonderful, progressive, social justice, multi-religious training for people looking to do good work in the world. And prior to that, I was living in the Central Valley, working with folks who've been pushed to the margins, unhoused folks, folks with severe mental illness. But I'm from Canada. My very first incarnation was in the arts.
Which city?
Toronto.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You said that you were trained as a minister but not ordained. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. So I have my Master's of Divinity, but I'm not ordained. It's possible one day in the future that I will re-engage that process.
Why did you decide not to become ordained?
For a variety of reasons. My path sort of took me this way. And the Gubbio Project is a really wonderful marriage of my deep faith identity and sense of call towards service and justice in the world and my nonprofit background and experience. And I feel deeply called to the work that I'm doing now.
That's great. It seems like the Gubbio Project is really what it means to be a religious person, and sometimes that's co-opted in our modern day society to mean something totally
absolutely
different.
Absolutely. I think the we are deeply rooted in Franciscan and Episcopal values mm-hmm. of honoring, really recognizing and seeing the divine and the good in whoever is in front of us in mm-hmm. the moment, and that every life is worthy of respect and dignity and belonging and connection and love. And that is something I think anyone can get behind.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
And how many people sleep at the Gubbio Project every day?
So we average about 320.
Between the two churches?
Between the two
churches.
How
many are at St. Boniface?
So St. John's, I believe, we're about 100, mm-hmm. 80 to 100, and St. Boniface makes up the rest mm-hmm. of that mix. It varies depending on the weather. Of mm-hmm. course, the weather's pretty rough right mm-hmm. now, and so people are looking for shelter.
Mm-hmm. And how long are they allowed to stay inside?
Yeah, so we open our doors at 6 a.m. at both sites. Mm-hmm. We close at 2 p.m. at St. Boniface and 12 at St. John's.
Mm-hmm. And are there any restrictions on behavior or who can come in, who can't?
Right. That is another piece of what makes us so unique is we try to be as barrier-free as possible. Mm-hmm. We aren't asking folks to be sober or clean. We aren't asking them to adhere to a particular code of conduct. Mm-hmm. We welcome whoever wants to come in and take part in sacred sleep. Of course, if they are experiencing some challenges mm-hmm. or behaviors that make that impossible, then we do have sort of a community set of like covenant and ways of being in relationship mm-hmm. that we expect people to be a part of. But for the most part, we are as barrier-free as possible. Mm-hmm. We try to be as much of a harm reduction model as possible. Mm-hmm. We're not asking for people's ID or demographic data, anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I assume they wouldn't be allowed to drink or use drugs inside.
No, okay. Thank you. That's really important. That is not we want to be as barrier-free as possible, but we also want it to be safe.
Right.
And that's a key piece of
it. And how many staff do you have?
So we are 10 of us at the moment. The majority of those are direct service, frontline folks. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is we have a peer hiring model. So one of the principles and values of Gubbio is we believe that folks living on the streets are best served by people who have lived experience of being without shelter, of the mental health system, folks who've been incarcerated. And that creates a different quality of relationship and community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what is your budget and how do you raise the money?
So we are very small. I won't say the specific number, but we are very small. We are largely funded by individual donors and some very generous foundations and grants.
You don't receive any city money?
We do not.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you hear most from homeless people about why they use the Gubbio Project?
Goodness, I have heard so many different things. The refrain that I hear most commonly is that at Gubbio, people feel safe mm-hmm. and they feel seen mm-hmm. for the full human being that they are.
Mm-hmm.
I also hear that sleeping 1 hour at Gubbio is the equivalent of sleeping five outside.
I bet.
Gubbio is meeting a really crucial need. There's not a lot of places in the city where people can go during the day, let alone to sleep,
mm-hmm.
Where it's quiet and restorative. Mm-hmm. There's definitely places where people can go and access the services and supports that they need, but rest mm-hmm. is not really an option.
Yeah. Are people able usually to fall asleep right away, or is it hard to make that adjustment when they've been outside?
I think it depends. I think you'd have to ask our guests.
I'm going to go with you right
after. Yeah. I think it really, really depends. A lot of our folks are dealing with some serious trauma mm-hmm. and just being in a space where they feel safe enough to actually fall asleep is a really big deal. I think when you walk through the doors of both sanctuaries and you hear the amount of snoring that's mm-hmm. happening,
yeah,
I think that's
I've
a good
that.
Sign that people are resting.
And what do they describe to you about being outside overnight and mm-hmm. trying to get that sleep? It's probably pretty obvious, but what is preventing mm-hmm. that from happening?
Mm-hmm. No surprise, the streets can be violent mm-hmm. and dangerous. Mm-hmm. people fall asleep, they can have their belongings stolen. So folks are doing whatever they can to keep themselves awake at night, to protect their belongings, to protect their loved ones, sometimes taking substances to keep themselves awake.
And I understand there's been some bad news that the boiler at St. Boniface is broken. And it's a pretty drafty place anyway, but it's really cold right now.
It's super cold in there. Mm-hmm. And we are in, as you know, the coldest time of year for the bay and the wettest. And that big space without heat is not great. Now, granted, it's not being outside in the rain. It's certainly better, but it's also very, very cold. And it's a big fix to get that fixed in that big old building.
Yeah. What are they going to do? They have a plan?
They do have a plan. They have found, we are tenants of the church, and the administrator has found the funding, and it is out to bid. And hopefully, fingers crossed, it will be fixed by the new year.
Yeah. And what can compassionate listeners of the San Francisco City Insider podcast do to help you in the meantime?
Yes, absolutely. Look us up. Come and volunteer. You can give. We, of course, support financial donations. But if you want to give in more concrete, tangible ways, we need ponchos. Our folks are getting quite wet. We need blankets. We can always use socks and things that people might not think of, like cough drops, razors, toiletries. But the big two at this time of year are ponchos and blankets.
Okay. The word is out.
Yes. Thank you.
And working with the homeless population every day, what have you learned about the crisis in San Francisco, and where do you think the city's response is going right or wrong?
Oh, goodness. There is so much. The scale of the need is staggering. We are living in the midst of a humanitarian crisis. And as we were saying earlier, it does feel as though it's a tale of two cities. This gap is increasing ever more every day. And of course, it's going to take a multifaceted, multi-layered approach to address this at all levels. And of course, there's a housing shortage. And of course, we absolutely need prevention. But I sometimes wonder if one of the greatest shortages is compassion. And there's something profound that happens when we get proximate to people that we deem as being so radically different from us. And if people had the opportunity to be in relationship with our unhoused neighbors, I think a lot of mindsets would change. So I have a lot of admiration for people that are doing work at every level, folks like Gubbio that are doing direct line service work, helping to alleviate suffering on the ground day in and day out, to the folks that are advocating and pushing change for policy and working at City Hall. And I think it's going to take all of us thinking about this creatively and working collaboratively to address it.
I'll be right back with Shannon Izinga after this break. I'm back with Shannon Izinga from the Gubbio Project. I'm always struck by the fact that there are more than 1,000 people on the waiting list just for a cot in a shelter every night in this incredibly rich city. And that number, every time I look, it doesn't budge. It only seems to go up sometimes. But I've never seen it below 1,000.
Yeah, same.
That I can remember in recent months. Does that speak to you as well, that number, just the fact that there is literally nowhere for these people to sleep under a roof?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's astounding, the level of need versus what we are doing to respond to that level of need. It's out of balance. It's out of whack. Yeah.
If you were mayor for a day, what would you do?
Oh, goodness. I am not qualified to be mayor for a day. Oh, my goodness. I don't know what I would do. That is a really wonderful question. I would do whatever I could to help increase compassion, get people into relationship with one another in different ways. Yeah, that's a very unsatisfying answer.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
I put you on the spot. We had a big story in today's Chronicle about a sweep yesterday on an alley called Willow in the Tenderloin. And 40 people were moved off the streets along with their belongings, and a lot of them were not offered according to them, a place to sleep. What do you think of that, you know, tension that City Hall is struggling with between wanting to resolve these huge encampments that, you know, some people are really bothered by seeing or having to,
right,
you know, get around as they make their way through the city versus the fact that there aren't,
right,
enough places for the people living in the encampments to go?
Right. I absolutely understand the impulse and the desire to keep our streets safe and clean for all San Franciscans, for everyone. And the sweeps are not a long-term solution,
mm-hmm,
to that problem.
Mm-hmm.
It just moves folks elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly criminalizing folks that live on the street, I don't think, is an answer to this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you've survived the serious questions,
yeah,
and now it's time for the lightning round.
Oh, right. Okay.
Where is your favorite place in San Francisco? Or you live in the East Bay, right?
So I do. I
we
live
can
in
expand
Oakland.
This geographically if you like.
Okay.
To get a burrito.
So I'm actually not a big, huge burrito fan, but one thing that I have rediscovered in working in San Francisco is my love of pupusas.
Oh yes,
and
they're
so
amazing.
They're so good. I love La Santa Neca,
uh-huh,
at Mission and 24th.
Yeah, I like that place too.
They're really good.
Yes. What is your favorite movie filmed in San Francisco?
So this is maybe kind of a sad pick, and it's sort of peripherally set in San Francisco, more Marin with little bits of San Francisco, is Beautiful Boy.
Oh, right.
With Steve Carell.
Mm-hmm.
Just beautiful, heartbreaking film, and
yes,
a really lovely look at addiction and, mm-hmm, and mental health.
I saw that, I think, on an airplane. Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
It's a hard-hitting movie.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Where is your favorite place in the city to get a stiff drink?
Okay, so my house. I have a housemate who makes what she calls potions.
Ooh.
And she's a master cocktail maker of the most amazing variety. She makes a really, really mean aviation.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to invite myself over.
Yeah, come on over anytime.
What was your first concert?
Oh, my gosh. I think it was Collective Soul.
Okay.
When I was like 13 in Canada, where I grew up.
Nice.
I think.
What was the last book you read?
Oh, I just finished The Overstory by Richard Powers. It won the Pulitzer in 2018. It is so good. It will change the way that you think about trees and the sentience of plant life.
Hmm.
Really good.
I wasn't anticipating that.
Yeah.
Change the way you think about trees.
Absolutely.
Giving money to panhandlers, good idea or bad?
I think it's a personal choice. I think it really depends. I usually do not,
mm-hmm,
give money to panhandlers. I make a very intentional choice about where my donation dollars are going to go to the organizations that I really believe in and,
mm-hmm,
support, that are looking to make real substantial changes to people's lived experience.
Mm-hmm. What is one thing average San Franciscans can do to help address the homeless crisis?
Right. First thing, educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Your work, Heather, is great in the Chronicle.
Thank
it's a
you.
Really easy way in for people. And there's a lot of other great resources where people can educate themselves about what is actually happening with our unhoused guests on the streets. Also, volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take time to go and get in relationship with people,
mm-hmm,
even if it feels like a stretch or it might be a little bit scary or it brings you,
mm-hmm,
into a neighborhood that you're not super confident being in.
Mm-hmm.
There is something really important and transformative that happens when we go and spend time in community, in relationship with people.
Can people volunteer with your
organization? Absolutely. You can come and volunteer with Gubbio, and we would love that. And use your access to resources, whether that is your time or your finances, or other expertise, to support organizations that are doing this really important work.
Mm-hmm. And if people want to donate to you or volunteer, how would they go about doing that?
Absolutely. They can go to our website, which is thegubbioproject.org, and that is G-U-B-B-I-O project.org.
Mm-hmm.
And on there, they can donate, and they can also get in touch with our volunteer coordinator. They can pop down to one of our sites at St. Boniface or St. John's,
mm-hmm,
and I'd be happy.
Can
to.
People just walk in?
We generally don't encourage people to,
mm-hmm,
just show up and walk in. But if people wanted to come down and meet with me,
mm-hmm,
I would be happy to give folks a little bit of an intro to what we do.
And they can arrange that on the website?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does Gubbio mean?
Yes, I was hoping you'd ask. So Gubbio is named after a town in Italy where St. Francis is reported to have mediated a truce between townspeople and a wolf. There was all kinds of conflict and hostility between the townspeople and the wolf, fighting over resources and space. And St. Francis went in and through communication, through building relationship, through creating mutual understanding, he mediated a truce. And that is similar to how Gubbio Project here in the Tenderloin and the mission got started. Building opportunities for people to come into relationship with one another, our housed and unhoused neighbors. And through building relationship and community, understanding one another, mm-hmm. and creating opportunities for transformation and change.
And on the subject of sleep, how many hours do you need each night?
Oh, my goodness. I am a power sleeper. Like, I could sleep 10. I don't.
I like doing that occasionally.
Yeah.
It's hard, but.
I try to get 8.
Yeah. Do you think you could sleep on a church pew? Or have you, when you're tired during the workday?
I have not slept on a church pew, and I often wonder if I could. I think if I was living on the streets, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, what is something you always make sure to squeeze into your busy day?
There are several things that I have to do every morning. I meditate, and I write, and I have a prayer practice.
Oh, what do you write about?
Oh, reflections, mm-hmm. all different kinds of things, poetry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, it was so fun to talk to you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you to Shannon Izinga for joining me today, to Karen Creighton for producing this episode, and to you for listening. San Francisco City Insider is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, please subscribe and give us a quick review wherever you get your podcasts. Support San Francisco City Insider and a lot of great journalism with a print or digital subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.